Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And as I always say, and I usually get into these diatribes on almost every show regarding that debt is fraud. Because, unfortunately, the only thing that kind of resonates with most people are those things that kind of affect their wallet. Just think about this, folks. If government was not needing to tax us, if they were only spending money on the things they had the authority to, now, sure, most of this would shift over to the state government. And we already know that the state government is problematic. But come on, folks, are you going to tell me that the bureaucracy of the federal government, you know, is an efficient machine in spending money?
Yeah,
we got Tammy. Welcome back, Tammy. The other thing I, you know, usually always say is if you're a person of faith, don't forget to learn. You know, it's like reading the scriptures, pray, and then act, right? Learn what we need to do regarding this Constitution. You know, the old saying, get informed and get involved. Well, that process of getting involved and getting informed is learning, praying, and acting. Don't forget. Now, I do not get, this is why I don't have ads, but I do actually try to help patriot groups and companies and so forth. And as I told you, Timber Nation was actually burnt down by progressives a couple years ago. And they're still kind of struggling getting their business back. And so if you're looking for good quality work, I've purchased lots of their stuff. I've purchased for my audio and other things. We've gotten some other unique things that I said, you know, let me get a soffit or what have you. But check them out, timbernation.com. Don't forget, because we still have Thanksgiving coming up. Try to consider getting your family to get away from the one holiday of gluttony. We probably have many days. I think America is finding itself almost gluttonous on weekends or whatever. I mean, just can't get enough. And so let's consider making one day this year a day of thanks. Thanks to him who gave us this Constitution, as Thomas Jefferson laid out in his first proclamation. Now, the day before Thanksgiving and the day of Thanksgiving, I will actually read that and talk about this. We'll talk about the history of Thanksgiving and why is it that we're even celebrating gluttony? How did that happen? Anyway, and don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays, Feedback Friday. So I'm hoping to actually have feedback from that very considerate lady that actually made a post on my Facebook page, which I've invited her to contact me. I'd be happy to have her come on so that she can give me my what for. one of the things that she didn't like was she had to listen for a long time to get my name. And it's not about me. It really isn't about me. But, you know, she made comment that I come across arrogant. And that is one of my failings, but that's not by intent. You know, when you actually start understanding something and you become a subject matter expert and you're passionate about it, that can come across as a pretty arrogant person, teaching people because they don't know. This isn't about an opinion. This is about academic evidence. I'm not just out here spewing my opinion. Far be it for me to do that. This is one of the reasons why I spend as much time as I do letting you read what Madison and Jefferson said and what the framers said during the ratification debates. We give you the evidence, right? I mean, Tammy, you've been a part of this for quite a while now. And what do you think? I mean, Is this beneficial at all?
I mean, going through the Kentucky and the Virginia resolution, super helpful because they go over and over and over again. Hey, don't go outside of your enumerated powers.
Yes,
It's pretty clear.
Okay, so that's where we're at. We're in the Kentucky Resolution. We just left off with the third. Now, the third is probably the most important out of this entire resolution, or this group of resolutions. So I ask you, because we now have a different audience. So you got to remember that this is a one-hour show, and the people that heard Section 3 or Resolution 3 was the people that may be tuning in the last half of the hour. There are people that tune in the first half of the hour. So I think it would probably be good to repeat the third resolution since it is the most important out of the entire document.
Okay.
Okay, is that fair?
Yep.
All right.
Want me to read it again then?
What's that? Yes, please.
You want me to read it again?
Yes, okay. Please. Yes.
That this assembly doth explicitly and peremptorily declare that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from what the compact to which the states are parties as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting the compact, as no further valid that they are authorized by the grants enumerated in that compact.
Okay, stop there. So actually, I would have had you stop before the other, that semicolon. But anyway, what he's basically saying is that here's the assembly. This is the state legislature of Virginia. That the state legislature of Virginia explicitly and commandingly declares that it views the powers of that federal government, the creature that was created by their compact, the state's compact, these powers as resulting from that compact, as limited and plain in the sense, or basically saying in the sense and intent of that compact. And that they are no further, anything that they do that is not within that compact is no further valid other than those things that are authorized. In other words, if it's not authorized, it is not valid. So now he goes into this is the real meat. Go ahead.
And in that case, hold on, let me see. And in that case of deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are in duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of the evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them.
And so what we have to highlight, folks, is that in the case of deliberate. In other words, when the federal government deliberately and blatantly and even goes down the path of exercising dangerous, not just powers, but dangerous powers of those that are powers that are not granted. In other words, these are unauthorized powers that they've assumed. Then those states that are the parties to it not only have the right to step in, they are duty bound to step in to interpose. Interpose means seize, stop. And he actually uses, a parallel word, a little bit redundant, for arresting. Interpose for arresting, because arresting is almost the same thing. Now, when we hear, and one of the things this is all about supporting the Constitution. I didn't say this yesterday, but it is necessary to point this out. When we're talking about support, we're not talking about passively supporting. Well, I'm not doing anything bad. I'm here and I'm voting and I'm saying good things. I am not directly violating the Constitution. That's passive support, like a supporting wall in your house. Your wall, that supporting wall, doesn't shift around to where the load changes and says, oh, no, I'll get over there and support that too. No, it just sits there and it supports one function, one part of the house. It's passive. When he talks about supporting the Constitution, he is not talking in a passive manner, because clearly he talks about it, and I'm going to highlight these three parts. In Resolution 1, it says that they must stand firm in defending the Constitution against every aggression, either foreign or domestic. And then he goes down and he says, this state pledges all of its power that for this end is that they are duty to watch over and oppose every infraction of those principles or anything that is violating the Constitution and the only basis of this union. And now he goes into stating that not only that, that whenever they actually go, especially, as a matter of fact, not only are they, you know, every infraction, he actually says that, every aggression against the Constitution, and then oppose every infraction, but he says not only that, when they're actually doing something that is absolutely deliberate, blatant, and dangerous, we are not only, you know, we not only have the right to step in, we're duty bound to step in.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you are answerable to God. It's almost that kind of power. You're answerable to God for failing to step in if you don't. How important is it for the states to actually reach in and tell the federal government you don't have the authority to do these things? Folks, we're looking at 200 years of sliding and compromises that have basically created a leviathan of tyranny.
Yeah, 200 years. Jeez. By the way, just so you know, at our state committee meeting last weekend,
okay, great,
we voted on legislative priorities, and the top legislative priority that we voted on as number one was Republic Review.
Woohoo! Hear that, folks? That's the state party. The state of Wyoming is the only state in the union. This is why I've said this for, well, since I've been broadcasting on Red State Talk Radio since 2018. So that's 6 years coming up this December. 6 years. The only state that you can live in where the party is actually aligned with the Constitution. Now, that doesn't mean every member, but the leadership of the party recognizes the importance of aligning and supporting and standing up for that Constitution. In other words, they're in these resolutions here. They're trying to do what's necessary. They just need to get the state legislature to actually do what these guys did.
And yeah, actually, and it wasn't like that until Frank Hethorn became the chair.
That is right. And I'd love to interview him. I'd love to have him on. And I'm not sure, because I've heard rumor that he may not be the chair after the next reorg. But I hope he is, because he's been the best thing for that state. And actually trying, and actually we have to change the views of conservatism. And we have to kind of, you know, quench or at least quill the ravenous thirst for a theocracy in America with compliance to the Constitution, because we don't need a theocracy. What we need is compliance to the Constitution. And I think with Frank, we've been able to get a lot done. And so
a lot.
Rumor has it that there's been a shift in the Republic Review Committee.
That's right. Yeah.
So who's the new chair?
I am.
Yay!
Yeah, I'll be the new chair. Yay. And then Scott Brown, he'll be the vice chair.
Okay.
And so
we're going to be having a meeting sometime soon. And actually, yes. I need to help you with that. I've just been busy. But, and you know, it's becoming snow weather. We actually had some snow this weekend, and we are going to be having more snow. I know it starts snowing in August in Wyoming.
Yeah.
It's a hard place to live, folks. I mean, when you only have a few months of nice weather, the rest is just either bone freezing cold. I mean, in Wyoming, it could be snowing in 28 degrees, and that's almost the summertime.
Yeah.
But I don't think that you guys like snow at 28 degrees, because typically that's wet snow. Right? I mean, do you guys get much wet snow up there?
Not much. Nope.
Yeah, okay. So it's usually dry snow because...
Yep,
okay.
Usually pretty dry.
Powdery, blows... It's like razors.
Blows away, yeah. Yep.
When it cuts into your face and so forth. Anyway, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so we've caught up. We've kind of caught up with where we left off regarding the Kentucky resolution. So by the way, folks, I do have these documents up on the academic source documents page on reclaimingtherepublic.org. And for those who, you know, may not like what I'm saying when I talk bad about your, you know, the party or your politicians and so forth, start learning. You're going to realize that we actually do not have a party form of government. We do have a party form of government. I said that wrong. We're supposed to have a Republican form of government, but instead we have a party form of government. And instead of, you know, of a Republican form of government, we have a judiciary form of government, because they have completely taken over the state's common law, and they've basically applied civil law from the federal government down. And this is why on Monday I started pointing out that when you look at the definitions, go, you know, look at common law. What is common law? Boom, it'll give you some history on it, and it'll basically tell you, you know, the common law is law that is basically established by case law and precedents and so forth. Then you'll actually look in civil law, and civil law will tell you the exact same thing, that there's statutes, case law, and, you know, precedents. And I'm telling you, folks, common law has nothing to do with case law and precedents. It has everything to do with the governing document in this Constitution. Maybe in common law in Britain, there may have been this case law precedence applied because you had a single magistrate. You had a single governing entity. We actually have three governing entities that are have a little overlap. The county overlaps on top of the state, and the state overlaps on top of the federal government, and the federal government has no overlap, which is why their jurisdiction is confined completely to that constitution. Anyway, okay, so let's get, thank you for the good news. That's great. I'd love to hear
it. Yeah.
So resolution four, let's go ahead. And he's going to use the word sundry, just in case you don't know, that's a variety. Okay.
Okay.
Not you, but the
General
listeners.
Assembly.
I'm sorry, not you, but the, just in case the listeners.
The audience, yeah, right. Yes. Yeah. That the General Assembly doth also express its deep regret that a spirit has in sundry instances been manifested by the federal government to enlarge its powers by forced constructions of the constitutional character which defines them, and that implications have appeared of a design to expound certain general phrases.
Okay, let me stop you right there. You said character, but this is one of the few times Madison actually says charter. And so he's using, it's defined in that charter. He's using this in a very specific and deliberate intent, because what is a charter? A charter is a document that is established by the sovereign. In other words, when the colonies were created, they were created by charters. When most NGOs, when most 501c3s, whenever, a charter comes along in creating them. And in that, there is a clear delineation of what you have to do in operating this institution for your funding. You violate that, you lose everything, they're going to revoke your charter. And so he's using that in a very specific construction, because he wants to clearly delineate that this Constitution gave the federal government very specific parameters to operate, like that limited power of attorney. Okay, go ahead. If you want to pick it up from and that implications, whatever.
Okay. And that implications have appeared of a design to expound certain general phrases, which have been copied from the very limited grant of power in the former Articles of Confederation, were the less liable to be misconstrued, so as to destroy the meaning and effect of the particular enumeration which necessarily explains and limits the general phrases, and so as to consolidate the states by degrees into one sovereignty, the obvious tendency and inevitable consequence of which would be to transform the present Republican system of the United States into an absolute, or at best, a mixed monarchy.
Okay. So he basically says, and he kind of is repeating what Jefferson said, if we do not stop this, they're going to go down and they're going to transform this Republican system, not this Democratic system, this Republican system of the United States into an absolute or at best a mixed monarchy. An absolute monarchy or a mixed monarchy. What do we have now? Now that we're this far down, what kind of monarchy do we have? Just using that one paradigm that he's using as a form of government. Now, a monarchy, let's be clear, a monarchy is a single person. I would just replace this. Now, hindsight being 2020, had he used oligarchy, an absolute or best at best mixed oligarchy? Mm-hmm. Because an oligarchy is a group of, you know, very powerful people, powerful entities. And so what do we have? Do we have an absolute oligarchy or do we have a mixed oligarchy?
I'd say we have a mixed.
There you go. Because why? Because I actually said this before. We're supposed to have a Republican, because that's what he says, the present Republican system. We're supposed to have this hybrid Republican form of government. You're supposed to have a Republican form of government in your county. It's required by the Constitution to have a Republican form of government in every state. And that the federal government is to be Republican in form as well. And therefore, it's tied and designed in the Constitution to do exactly that. So we have a three-tiered Republican form of government. That's the system that we're supposed to have. And he says it's going to be transformed in either to an absolute monarchy, and I would just change that to an oligarchy. Not to a single person, but to a group of people, or a mixed oligarchy. In other words, a few different groups of people. And so we actually have a mixed oligarchy, like you said. You're absolutely correct. Because I already identified that we have an oligarchy within the judiciary. We have a judiciary form of government. When they can create law and they can rule us, because we allow them to rule us, because it's absolutely a violation of the Constitution that they're even involved the way they are, then we've transformed, or we've allowed them to transform our Republican form of government into a judicial form of government. We also have an executive form of government. What is an executive? A lot of people talked about the overturning of the Chevron case. That happened in the summertime. People brag. I know some people bragging that they were involved in that. And it was just going from one hot pan, you know, from the fry pan and, you know, right into the fire, actually into another frying pan. Because what the judiciary basically said was, we're not all going to allow the executive form of government, these bureaucracies, because the bureaucracies are created by the executive, and the executive is creating executive orders or allowing them to create their own laws, bypassing the legislative. Mm-hmm. The Republican form of government, because a Republican form of government is where we, the people, and our representatives are the ones that rule. They're the ones that create the law. And so the executive form of government, being the Energy Department, the EPA, and these other departments, that's how you can say we actually have a executive form of government as well. It is competing with they're working in tandem with the judiciary form of government. Well, at least until recently, when the judiciary form of government says, we're jealous of the executive form of government being able to do these things, and we're pulling them back in, and we will have oversight over them. Now, they didn't get rid of them. They did not get rid of the unconstitutional bureaucracies. And so we're going into a break. So when we come back, we will dive into, you know, this form of government, because I think it's really imperative to dive into it right now. And we've covered an executive form and a judiciary form of government, vice our Republican form of government we're supposed to have. And there's a couple more forms of government that we actually have, and we'll dive into those. I'll be right back after this promo. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so there, I actually mentioned another form of government earlier. Do you remember what that was?
A democracy?
Okay. It had to do with politics. We have a party form of government. How do we have a party form of government? Because the party, in violation of the Constitution, controls people's access to being able to be a candidate for a federal position. Is there anywhere in the Constitution that allows parties to determine whether a person can, you know, and which person that identifies under their party, which person will actually go on the general ballot? Does the Constitution allow that?
No.
Absolutely not. And so when we look at how a person gets their name on the ballot in a state and they want to be independent, do they have the same privileges as the parties?
Definitely no. There's no chance they're going to win.
No. So, period. Well, you're right. I understand that because we think, but actually the parties control access to the ballot. If you're not a party player, then you actually have to go. If you're not a party that's recognized and you have to have enough people, like in Missouri, I think they need 50,000 people to keep their name on the ballot, signing petitions and signing a petition to make sure that they maintain ballot access. If not, the Constitution Party is not listed in that state. They're controlling access. Or you have to spend money to obtain a bunch of signatures, or you have to spend money to get on the ballot. In other words, you have to. And if you look, every state has their own rules, and who makes up those rules? Well, it's our legislature, but it is the party that they're protecting. We actually have two parties, folks. There is the grassroots part of the party. That's you, I, those people who aren't elected. And then there's the party of the elected. And the party of the elected does not exemplify the party itself, especially the Republican Party. I mean, the Democratic Party is pretty much similar to the Democratic Party in office. You know, the grassroots, because they're about mayhem, they're about burning the buildings down, getting out and doing protests and all sorts of violations of the law. And they don't care about the law. They do not care about the rule of law. And they act the same way in office. But there's a huge difference between the grassroots, the people of the GOP, and the elected officials who wear the Republican brand. And that's what you've been talking about. And this is America's problem. We actually have a party form of government. And we've gone down this path to where the people have drank the Kool-Aid to where they blindly vote on the party. If we actually, if we went down the path of saying we're banning the use of party terms, Republican, Democrat. There should be no parties. We're outlawing parties in this state. Now what do you do? Well, that means anybody and everybody can actually get their name on the ballot. And there will be no primary. So in other words, the taxpayers don't have to pay for an election that is strictly designed and created for the party by the party to protect the party.
Right.
Wow. You can't tell me we do not have a party form of government. They have seized control to access to our actual government. And when we look at the fiasco with the Republicans over the past 2 years in Congress, when government became a standstill, why? Because the Republican Party lost control of their control. What?
Mm-hmm.
How is that even possible? How can a party actually stop the progress of government? Because we've allowed the party to seize that level of control. So, now I've made the argument for three forms of government. We also have a corporate form of government. Because the corporations actually do things that the government can't do. NGOs and corporations, these private entities, supposedly, are doing things. They're spying on you. They're prohibiting you. They're actually creating laws that violate your rights, and the government does nothing about it. And they're actually paying the government to create the laws that they want. How is it possible that a person in any state in this union could lose their house without actually doing the fraud, you know, lose their house by fraud? Without any evidence being proven that they were involved in those loans. How is it that a bank can come along and take your house from you because somebody defrauded that bank and they have access to your house now? How can that happen? And why has not one state stood up and said, thou shalt never take a person's house until you have proven without a shadow of a doubt that they were involved in defrauding you in that loan and, you know, this fraud that has happened. In other words, if they did that, the banks would actually have to swallow these loans. But instead, the lobbyists who want to sell you insurance and actually protect the banks because they have big pockets. They spend lots of money on politicians. And they give them all of these great laws and they keep them in office and their fortunes are all driven by these lobbyists, both with the insurance companies, what have you. The point is, folks, that they're actually serving them and not you. So we have a corporate form of government because they're running interference and protecting the corporations. If you go into a repair shop in a state that actually requires these, you know, like a tire shop, if, you know, they create these regulations. Oh, well, if you're got only this much left of tread, you still have tread. You're not even bald yet. You still have tread. And you have this much tread left, then you have to get new tires.
Yeah.
How is that not a corporate governing you? It's legislation that was created to bring more sales because how, you know, if you're a responsible driver and you don't have an accident and you actually drive your tires until they go flat and you don't have any accidents because, you know, the balder the tires, the you don't drive as fast, you don't drive out in the rain, or if you do, you're very cautious and careful, you know, not getting on high speed roads, that type of stuff. And you accept full liability. In the old days, Americans accepted full liability. Mm-hmm. And you go into a tire store and they say, well, you know, you've got to get new tires now. And say, you know what? I'll sign a release of liability. No, the law says we have to do this. How is that not highway robbery?
Yeah, it is. It's infuriating.
And so every state in the union has these types of laws. And we're allowing these forms of government to be operated in our Republican form of government. This is why I harangued and went over how important Republicanism is and how making all elections local is critical. These lobbyists should not be able to be buying your politicians. The only reason corporations and people with that don't live within your election area are able to filter money into their pockets is because they've allowed it. They've protected themselves to do this. This all started with the Supreme Court in the 1800s and the government's basic avarice in trying to control everything, even corporations. This is why we covered this in the Constitution. They can't do that. But again, let me stop the monologue. We're on, I believe, the fourth resolution, or no, we're actually in the fourth resolution, right? No, we actually had the mixed monarchy. I'm sorry. As I'm reading this, that's what caused this whole diatribe. So forgive me. I may sound a little arrogant, not meaning to. I'm just trying to give you the facts, folks. If you can prove otherwise that we don't have these forms of government, because the way you can tell what form of government you have is how you're being ruled. Where do those rules and laws come from? Are they your laws, and are the laws being created supporting you, your life, and your property rights? And I've proven, based on all of these different scenarios, that they're taking your property from you. And they're literally positioning themselves to, you know, do bad things, taking your life even, because they're allowing these planes to drop all of these chemicals on you. They're allowing food companies to poison you or take away all of, I mean, from economic warfare and all the different warfare tactics, we're being attacked by our own government. If they were trying to do this in some nation in Europe or some nation in Asia, that nation would stand up and say, this is warfare. You can't do this to us. Oh, but because they're our government, it's okay. This is almost how Hitler started ruling Germany by actually attacking and dividing and conquering their populace. Go ahead with the number five, resolution five.
That the General Assembly doth particularly protest against the palpable and alarming infractions of the Constitution in the two late cases of the Alien and Sedition Acts passed at the last session of Congress, the first of which exercises a power nowhere delegated to the federal government, and which by uniting legislative and judicial powers to those of executive subverts the general principles of free government, as well as the particular organization and positive provisions of the federal constitution. Okay. And the other of which acts exercises in like manner a power not delegated by the constitution, but on the contrary, expressly and positively forbidden by one of the amendments thereto, a power which more than any other ought to produce universal alarm, because it is leveled against the right of freely examining public characters and measures and of free communication among the people thereon, which has ever been justly deemed the only effectual guardian of every other right.
Okay, so I was going to interrupt you, but technically what he does right here in Resolution 5 is he, in one paragraph, does what Jefferson does in several resolutions, and he's basically laying out an audit that the government is actually doing by, you know, these acts and how they're directly violating the Constitution, whether they be the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. And so he kind of performs a summation over the audit in concurrence with Kentucky that, yes, they are doing these things. These acts are bad because they're directly violating the Constitution as well as our rights. And so go ahead. Let's dive into six. And let's just read the red part.
Okay. That this state, having by its convention, which ratified the federal Constitution, expressly declared that, among other essential rights, the liberty of conscience and of the press cannot be canceled, abridged, restrained, or modified by any authority of the United States.
Okay, so what he's laying out here is that this state in a convention that ratified the Constitution, they expressly declared, among other essential rights. Now, don't forget, the Ninth Amendment is the amendment that actually protects all rights. Even though there may be an enumeration in the Constitution, it cannot be construed to violate the rights of the people that are not mentioned or not identified. And therefore, they basically laying out that they expressly declared, among other essential rights, the liberty of conscience. Is that in the Bill of Rights? No, but it's protected by the Ninth Amendment. And of the press, that's in the Bill of Rights, cannot be canceled, abridged, restrained, or modified by any authority of the United States. So this is something that they actually asserted, because at that point in time, the Bill of Rights didn't even exist. Right? So when they were creating and ratifying, they basically moved forward and said, look, they can't do these things because they're not enumerated. They can't take away your conscience. They can't interfere with the press because it's not enumerated. And then they went off and created an amendment to actually protect those things. The Ninth, the First, and so forth. Now go ahead and read on.
Okay, and from its extreme anxiety to guard these rights from every possible attack of sophistry or ambition, having with other states, recommended an amendment for that purpose, which amendment was in due time annexed to the Constitution. It would mark a reproachable inconsistency and criminal degeneracy if an indifference were now shown to the most palpable violation of the rights thus declared and secured, and to the establishment of a precedent which may be fatal to the other.
Okay, so what he then says is that not only did we declare this, and it was ratified that they couldn't do these things, that not only on top of that, the Constitution was amended, and it actually had in the amendments this protection from these things, and that now we actually see a blatant violation of one of those rights, of the press. Specifically, that was actually listed. Remember, the Ninth Amendment just protects all the others that aren't listed, like the right of conscience. So anyway, so he basically says that these things were secured by that amendment, and to the establishment of a precedence, they're talking about allowing these things to happen, it will establish this precedence that would be fatal to the Union. Go ahead. We're going to go into seven now.
Okay. That the good people of this Commonwealth, having ever felt and continuing to feel the most sincere affection for their brethren of the other states, the truest anxiety for establishing and perpetuating the union of all, and the most scrupulous,
yep,
i.e. honorable, fidelity to that Constitution which is the pledge of mutual friendship and the instrument of mutual happiness.
Yes. Okay, so again, we're, you know, the warming. We've got some anxiety here, but we are your friends. We're your siblings, and we want to ensure that we maintain this one thing that guarantees mutual happiness amongst the Union, that federal government stays within the powers granted. Because one of the other things that was not granted to them was they couldn't give favors to one state to another. And they've been doing that big time. There's all sorts of ways that the federal government creates favors for most of the eastern states, and the western states are being backhanded left and right. And so when you look at how they pour money into, and help, secure the resources of the eastern states where they've stolen the resources of the western states. And, when we look at New York, New York is a sucking chest wound when it comes to getting money being poured into it, because it has the SEC, which is, the New York Stock Exchange, those types of things. Remember when they failed? Every time they fail, we bail them out. When we have other companies or other little problems, they're not even supposed to bail out. There's no authority for them to provide welfare, corporate welfare at all. But when we look at all the banks that failed around the United States, were they, no, they were too small. It was okay for them to fail. These guys were too big to fail. Why is it that New York has institutions that are too big to fail? Because they created a favorable environment for them. And they're not supposed to do that. That was clearly delineated. They weren't to be involved in the states like that. As a matter of fact, the fact is, folks, that your IRAs, your 401ks are invested in a state that you have no protection from. And if we actually have our way, we need to actually, every state needs to have its own exchange so that you start investing in you and your state instead of why pour all your money into New York? Watch what happens if we actually break that apart and all of the states step up and create their own exchanges. Money will magically migrate away from, because the opportunities throughout the Republic, when all of a sudden the resources of these states are actually realized again, the mining and so forth, they don't have to register and then pour money into New York, because that's what they're doing to register to be listed. Why not make the money in your state from these gold mines or what have you, for the trees or the coal, or the energy that you're creating? Folks, we're being bamboozled and we're being aligned so that we pour our wealth directly into those who have been anointed to receive it. You hear me say this about Elon Musk. He's not a good guy. Here's a guy that's had the advantages left and right, right and left and right. When he created Tesla, it wasn't because he wanted to sell electric cars in a free market, because the federal government was creating advantages for electric cars. And so he was guaranteed a full price sale on every one of his cars. Guaranteed.
Wow.
Right? I mean, Chrysler, Ford, Dodge, I mean, GM, I'm sorry, you got the Mopar, the Ford, and the GM, the three American standard cars. They had to produce cars, and if they couldn't sell them, then they had to discount them. They weren't getting subsidies. They were not guaranteed the full value, and the federal government had no business doing that. And it actually got you, because not only were they getting subsidies, but you were getting subsidies if you bought the crap. Well, we're going to give you energy credits. And that all, basically, most of that money went into Elon Musk's pocket, as well as into, you know, maybe other corporations, because many companies were being bought or paid off or incentivized or getting free loans for creating charging stations or creating a charging station on their premises so that you can get free energy. So how is this? How was this good for America? It wasn't. And Elon Musk was not the good guy in all of this. Anyway, and this is, I mean, he's a billionaire now. Isn't that great? And look, he's trying to create this global communication network that he can control. You know, there are wolves in sheep's clothing. And I don't trust any billionaire. As a matter of fact, I mean, when the rich man came to Christ and said, if I obey all the commandments, can I make it to heaven? It's not me saying this. It's Christ that's saying that it is easier for a camel to walk through or crawl through the eye of a needle than it is. And it's a small doorway to getting into the interior sanction of a city of, you know, like Jerusalem. So that camel, if you don't understand this metaphor, the camel actually has to get on its hunches and crawl through the eye of the needle, like being on its knees and, you know, shifting forward. It's very difficult to get them to do that. That's why he said that. It is easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter into heaven. There you go. So let's kind of finish off here with the next part.
Okay. The General Assembly doth solemnly appeal to the like dispositions of the other states, in confidence that they will concur with this Commonwealth in declaring, as it does hereby declare, that the acts aforesaid are unconstitutional, and that the necessary and proper measures will be taken by each for cooperating with this state in maintaining the authorities, rights, and liberties referred to the states respectively or to the people.
Okay. What he basically just said here, and I'm not trying to, you know, insult anybody, but what he's literally saying is he's not nullifying these and saying they're void and of no force. He is saying that they're clearly unconstitutional and that the states, all the other states, need to take the proper and necessary measures that they will cooperate with this state. And this is what he says, that the aforesaid acts are unconstitutional and that the necessary and proper measures will be taken by each for cooperating with this state, by each state. By cooperating with this state to maintain these rights, privileges, liberties, and so forth that we're supposed to have. That's what he's saying. There's a huge difference between how he laid it out and how Jefferson kept on saying they're null and void, because most people thought that they were nullifying it. And it's in the 1799 resolutions when we get to that in our in Monday, or actually Tuesday, next show, in our next show. You'll actually hear how Jefferson starts to lament. And then he goes down this and he basically lays out any state can nullify, but they don't. And he doesn't spell it out that if a state nullifies federal law, they have to secede from the union. They have a right to do it, and they would have to secede. And you do not get these facts from those people, the nullifiers out there, the John Birchers, the 10th Amendment Center, people that are preaching nullification. They're wrong. And we will prove this when we get to Madison's notes on nullification. So we've got a lot of stuff we still need to get through. And I'm sorry that it takes this long, but these documents are so critical. And I promise that if we can't get to the Organic Act and the treaty, because we're taking this, it's taking so much time to get through these things, that we'll cover it in January. We're going to cover it. I'm not going to just say we missed it this year. We'll try to get it in next year because it's that important. We've got to cover those things. So anyway, with that, go ahead.
What you're saying is that even though there's a law that's unconstitutional, we should follow it until the states get together. And
yes, there are certain things that the states can do. Right? Because they don't have to walk into a court anymore. They do not have to surrender, a federal court to say, you have to come in here and defend yourself over these unconstitutional things we're doing. Never at any point in time are you required to step into a court that does not have jurisdiction. So states can literally today stop walking into federal courts, surrendering their sovereignty. They can do that today. You're not obligated. They cannot create a law, nor can they enforce a law that can drag you into their court. That's not in the Constitution. They only have the jurisdiction. And bottom line, as soon as you say, where is your jurisdiction? You've basically ended their ability to pull you in because they have to prove jurisdiction. They have to prove standing, just like jurisdiction. And so once you say, well, you know, that's not enumerated in the Constitution. Well, we've been doing it. And then you say, yeah, well, we're not holding to you. We're not allowing you to do it anymore. You're not doing it to us anymore. And that's where we can go, folks. But anyway, we'll talk more about this. And these things will be tucked into my points with Trump on Mondays and Fridays. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.